Welcome to the Bald Move TV Podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for all the TV. You can find everything we do at baldmove.com because we are part of the Bald Move Network. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And I really butchered that intro.
No.
Everything out of order.
No, you brought it.
I tried to bring it. I can't bring it very hard tonight because my voice is ready to go. I've been sick. Real sick. For a while. So if you hear me coughing, if you hear me stuttering and making all sorts of horrible noises into this microphone, you know why.
Because you're a terrible podcaster.
Aside from that fact, what show do you want to start with tonight?
Well, I think I'll start with reminding our listeners that the Bald Move Meetup is in Boulder, Colorado.
2 weeks,
about
man.
2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Friday, February 1st at 7 p.m. Actually, the guys are calling it 8 p.m.
Yes.
But we've been saying 7 p.m. for months,
so
we probably should arrive at 7.
We will arrive at 7.
Start the drinking early.
Yeah, So we'll be nice and drunk when everybody from the Personal Arrogance gets there.
It's at the Avery Brewing Company. You can find out more information at averybrewing.com. And I've got on good authority that I've got good beer.
I'm rocking out to this song.
I am,
this
too.
This is such a good song.
It is. It's Riot Rhythm by Sleigh Bells.
Cool.
Which I was introduced to on the girls' TV show that we'll be talking about here in a bit.
Save it for the show notes.
I would say let's start with Downton Abbey.
Okay, let's do that. So I'm going to approach this a little differently than we approach our other shows because we don't have a whole lot of time. We're talking about a lot of shows in this podcast. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to run down kind of the storylines, the threads, the plot threads moving through this episode. And we'll talk about each one.
Let's talk about just in general.
Okay.
Because you just caught up to Downton.
I did. I watched a shitload of television over the last week. Caught up with season two and season three.
How do you think it stacks up to the Breaking Bad and Mad Men's of the world?
Oh, come on. Not
that good?
It got so soap opera-y.
That, especially
said,
in season two.
In season two, yeah. Season one was really, really good. I was enjoying it thoroughly.
Yes.
Season two went a little soap opery. Season three seems to be back on track. I like what they're doing with it.
I do too. What do you think? What exactly went wrong in season two? I feel the biggest thing is delayed gratification. I was really tired of seeing Matthew and Mary's dance. I was really tired of Bates and Anna's bullshit by that time. It's Bates and Anna's storyline is still the least favorite part.
When you were trying to take a stack of shirts and pull the drama out of that, it's rough. That's what I'm saying. No, so it's exactly right. You're exactly right. They milked these things, these plot threads that have been going on for too long.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of a specific example.
Well, I think Bates
are the
biggest one, because like I think at one point in season two she's just like, I don't know if I can take much more of this. I'm like, yes, please shoot yourself. Can we get some definitive direction that this thing's going?
So I think there were actually a couple of fuck ups throughout season one and two. Season
Lord
one,
Grantham's weird affair with the maid.
Yes, was that in season one or
that
two?
Was season two?
That was season two,
and
still like not resolved. I mean, she left,
right.
But nothing ever came of it. Like that's the thing. If you're going to do something like that, you need to pay it off.
Yeah,
and they didn't. The other thing was in season one. I forget what I was going to say now. You totally derailed me here. I don't know.
Well, anyway, that's season one, season two. Yeah. We're now talking about season three. We had the first episode was actually a two-parter, episodes one and two, and then we just got done with episode three. And conveniently enough for our podcast purposes, we basically began and ended two different arcs there. And I'm stealing your thunder. Go ahead.
So one of the arcs you're talking about is Edith's wedding, right?
Yes.
With the old dude.
Her courtship with...
Can't remember his name.
Sir Anthony.
Sir Anthony, yeah. Sir Anthony, as they like to pronounce it, I think.
Who am I the only one that doesn't see a problem with this?
No, you are not, because I don't either.
First of all, Edith is not that bad. She was kind of a real bitch in season one and kind of jealous, but they're calling
her
the ugly sister.
She's pretty ugly.
Is she?
I think so.
I find her at least moderately attractive. Now, she's rich and she's noble. You can't... And again, it's like she was perfectly content to run off with the farmer neighbor.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's not like she has got high standards, okay?
That's
true.
They
can't marry her off.
You would think that they would just want to marry her off.
The hot young one ran off with the Irish revolutionary, for God's sakes.
Okay. So, first of all, let me calibrate my statement on saying that Edith is not hot.
Okay.
Because her sisters, by comparison, are incredibly hot. Mary, I think, is the second hottest.
Yes.
And I think the young one, Sybil. But most people don't agree with that. Most
really?
People think that Mary is by far the hottest.
Most
which
people,
I disagree.
She's got... Well, the other thing is, like, because, you know, we shouted him out last week. We're going to shout him out this week. Up Yours Downstairs was talking
yes.
about how her wedding dress was awesome. I thought that wedding dress...
Edith's wedding
no,
dress?
No. Mary's.
Mary's.
From the episode 2, where she actually got married. She came downstairs.
Yeah.
I thought her wedding dress was really shitty and gross looking, and like
I thought
something
Edith was better.
It looks like it. Remember the bride story in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark?
You're losing man points here, but yes, okay.
No, for talking about.
Oh, I loved her wedding dress. It was so beautiful.
I didn't.
Fair enough.
It looked like something a 5-year-old would wear, pretending to be a bride. I didn't get it. No, I didn't like
creepy.
It at all. I actually thought Edith out wedding dressed.
Yeah.
Mary by a damn sight. And I'm the same way. I don't know if I think... Well, obviously, Mary's better looking than Edith.
She out-uglies her by a nose.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and Sybil, like, lives them all in the dust, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
She's stunning.
Yeah, absolutely. That is not the point that I was trying to make.
Okay.
I just wanted to qualify my statement on Edith.
Okay.
I do not remember the... quote the point that I was trying to make.
We're
earlier.
Trying to think we are that we. I don't see any problem with her dating Sir Anthony.
Yeah,
or marrying
well,
him.
That was a big thing in season one, right? Like everybody was saying, "Oh, you're kind of ugly. You don't really have any attractive features, so you're going to be a spinster."
Right.
And now they've turned her into a spinster. Congratulations, parents.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Sir Anthony.
And the fact, like, I don't see, like, I kind of feel like this is going to irreparably damage your relationship with her father and her grandmother because the Dowager Countess was right up there saying, no, let it happen. You know this has to happen in the charade.
Yeah.
This is terrible. Plus, like...
I feel like once you're at the altar, you got to go through with it.
And it was...
Right?
And it was and the whole time, because I got this twitch, like... Oh, God, she's so happy and everybody's so supportive. Please do not fucking... I thought, number one, he's going to die.
Oh, boy. That would
and
be
I'm
horrible.
Like, how can you go on? But this is even worse. And, like, all the characters are even saying, oh, my God, I would even, like, Hatchet Face Miss O'Brien, basically the Wicked Witch of the North, is
Hatchet
saying...
hair, too. Her hair is terrible.
Yeah.
It's killing me every
the
episode.
Little bangs with the curls.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, she's like, oh, if that happened to me, I'd kill myself. I mean, yeah. I don't see how she doesn't just become a serial killer or something.
Well, I saw it on Sir Anthony's face as he was standing with Bear at the altar. You could
yes.
tell something wasn't right because he wasn't smiling.
Right.
He looked concerned.
But what's sad is it killed two people shot at happiness because I think Edith really would have been happy with him and he obviously was thrilled with her.
Yeah.
So it's like, Jesus, I don't know.
So we'll see what
but
happens
But that was
with
a
Edith.
Nice little conclusion. I thought that was going to be, it could have been a season-long arc. Another one. Is Lord Grantham fucking losing his vast fortune?
Okay, that's exactly where I was about to go. I want to do a little ethics test here with
you.
If you're in Matthew's position, what do you do before that letter?
Well, I don't know what the alternative was.
The alternative is to save your new wife's estate and her future.
But he's kind of got a point. That's really a vanity project. And that's
it
one
is.
Of the biggest...
Downton Place is not that bad.
No kidding. Everybody's like, won't it be ever so cramped? I'm like, fuck you,
we'll
bitch.
Only have 8 servants.
Yes, right. Like, man, it must be really rough. But that's kind of... I wonder if Julian Fellowes is deliberately showing kind of how...
Oh, certainly.
How tone deaf, because he's obviously, I think, is very nostalgic for this period, but he's also, I think he consistently portrays Lord Grantham as being an idiot.
See, I don't know about that because I'm not sure if that's just like him showing the accepted behavior then.
I mean, he's got a definitely strong moral center, but he does a lot of dumb things. And, you know, losing your wife's
eggs
fortune.
Eggs in one basket.
Oh, my God. It was so stupid.
Yeah.
So it's like, I actually got put off by Mary, you know, being such a bitch about what Matthew's going to do with his money. you know, and refusing to save the family. Because then when I saw where they were moving to, I'm like, really?
Yeah.
For fucking real?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know. I and the thing is I thought, sure, that this was going to be the season three version of the Intel. You know, that, like, I didn't really care about – that was the hook for season one. I was all about the relationships and, you know, the machination and drama and that. But it's like, oh – so this is going to be this. I have no idea what they're going to go next with the series.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of those loose ends that could have drawn out the entire season are gone now.
Please, God, don't make this a mystery theater production with Bates and Anna. I can't stand that. I don't know if I can take it.
All right.
Least
favorite
part of
the
series.
So let's talk about them. That's okay. One of the other threads going on is Bates in prison and Anna's quest to free him.
Why do you want to talk about this?
Because totally it's part of the show.
Let me ask you this. Is it possible that Bates really killed his ex-wife?
Yes,
I'm starting to think like that might be where the show's going.
If he is, he's a really good liar.
Do you think, because the thing is like when he snatched that dude up by the collar, and I think like he has to do that. It's in his contract. He has to do that once a season. Snatch a fool up by the collar and pin him against the
Thomas
wall.
Thomas in season one.
That's his move, right? And doesn't he do it in season... Like I think he might have.
Oh
like,
yeah, he grabs
his wife,
the countess, the
slaps her.
No,
but no, I just feel like he has shown that maybe he is possible. It is possible that he'd kill somebody.
I don't know. I mean,
and his ex kind of deserved it.
She's
a loathsome person.
That's who he snatches up in season two, right?
I think
his
so.
Ex,
yeah. He gets little man hands with her.
Yeah, he does. She totally deserves whatever came to her, obviously, death.
Yeah, hopefully you guys have listened to me enough to know that I'm not a misogynist, but this woman needed to die.
I said the same thing about Thomas in season one.
Yes.
He's just an ass and he needed to be dropped on his head.
To need to die, yeah.
Yeah. So that's another thread. We won't talk too much about Bates in prison, although I do have one question. Why did the guy warn him in the courtyard about... the thing in his bunk that was planted
there. I don't know, because
I hope they address that next episode or very soon, because that's kind of mysterious.
Right. It's funny because I'm watching Oz and my extracurricular activity.
How does this stack up?
That's the thing, is like I keep on expecting, like, you know, Bates is going to make someone his prag, or you know, there's going to be like a kilo of heroin in someone's bunk, and someone's going to get shivved. It's really warping my perception of these views, but yeah.
Okay, well, let's go to Thomas versus O'Brien.
Oh, it's this on is... like Donkey Kong now as of this episode.
Oh, I just remembered the other thing. Okay, with Thomas and O'Brien, they have a lot of chances in this show, in my opinion, to really fuck things up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about the writers, not the characters here.
Yes, they definitely are walking the high wire.
So they introduce these issues that can easily be cleared up just by people speaking to each other.
Sure.
And this is a case where they actually did clear it up, and I'm glad that they did. They didn't fuck this one up.
But I almost think it's because Mosley is so weak.
Yes, they played it a little bit on his character.
Like if Mosley was Bates, he would have taken O'Brien's hate on the chin.
Or, well, there's also the thing where he could have just said, hey, Thomas did this, like with the shirts or not the shirts.
And he didn't.
He was just too flabbergasted that, oh, people are mad at me.
Right.
Yeah. So I think one thing that they did fuck up in season one is Mrs. Padmore's blindness.
Yeah.
I think there were no consequences for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like it just ended. They had the operation. She's back. She's fine. Right. Never spoken of again.
Why would it?
Because to be emotionally impactful, it has to have some consequence to her, right?
Well, I mean,
she was scared for a little while about the operation. That was it.
And then Lord Grantham said that, you know, you're going to be all right. And he kind of, like, this Miss Hughes cancer scare is that part two.
Now, we don't know what the doctor actually told her.
Well, that's true.
It was never shown. And I could see Miss O'Brien, or, sorry, not Miss Brian. What is her name?
Hughes.
Yeah, Miss Hughes. I could see her being too proud or just not wanting people to know that she's sick.
I think that's correct, but the scene at her at the end, which is one of the best scenes in the show, of Carson, like, you know, he's
singing
like,
away.
Like the weight of the world is off of him.
Yeah.
And her reaction to him seeing that, like, I think her reaction would have been different if she had told a lie.
Yeah.
Or
what was, a great scene, you're right.
Yeah, it was a great scene. But also, I got to put... So we're talking about the Thomas and O'Brien war.
Yeah.
Let's lay odds on that. Who's winning?
Oh, man. Because
my money's on O'Brien.
And mine is, too, just because I don't want to see Thomas win.
That, and I just think that when, you know, she fucking killed an unborn child. Like
fair enough.
There is not, I mean, she's got a level, a gear mm-hmm. that is way lower than I think Thomas. It's not that he's not capable. It just wouldn't occur to him to do something like that.
Yeah.
Because he's got, I don't know. She's just.
Also, that kind of makes me feel a little shameful for rooting for her because she has done way worse things than Thomas.
I can't. Thomas is the schoolyard bully that,
certainly,
like, you know, is going to accidentally get pulverized by an MMA brawler.
All right.
So, what's the guy, Chuck the Iceman? It's like he stepped on his toes. You know, the schoolyard, the junior high punk. And he's going to get his face rearranged. Yeah, that's Thomas in this.
Yeah, hopefully by Mr. Bates. That's who I want to see do it.
Right. I also like Lord Grantham's protestations that he doesn't want to be the known as the Grantham who lost the ruined Downton Abbey. I'm like, too late, dude. You fucking lost an entire fortune, just like your
father.
But nobody
knows that.
I know, but he's like, I don't want to be known as. It's like, well, you already are. And Matthew bailing you out hasn't changed that.
Yeah, so you got to wonder why he would give Matthew half of his estate if it weren't for his failure, you know. Yeah,
right.
Like, people are going to put two and two together, I think.
I will say that manly handshake was about as bro as it gets in 1920s England, right?
Yeah,
that's
sure.
As bro as you can get.
Definitely. The final story thread here is what I'm calling slut, slut, who cares. It's that bastard's mother. I don't give a shit about the plot line.
And I hate Cousin Violet.
And can I say...
Is it Cousin Violet?
Probably...
Who's the Matthew's mother? I get confused.
It's not Violet. Violet is...
Violet's the Dowager Countess.
Yeah, the Countess, yeah. I don't know her name.
I don't either. I can't stand her. She seems like she's got Asperger's or something. She doesn't understand social grace.
I think she's there to disrupt the social grace. Because if someone wasn't there to talk shit... like her, or I mean, Lord Grantham, or sorry, not Lord Grantham, Lady Grantham's mother.
Mm-hmm.
Then yeah, they just sit around the table drinking tea all day.
Right? Are we going to see Shirley MacLaine some more? Because I quite enjoyed her character.
Who is she?
She is.
Oh, the Lady Grantham's mother.
Yes,
I don't know her name.
Yeah, the American.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun in that situation, suggesting the indoor picnic.
Mm-hmm.
Inside Downton,
which actually kind of saved the evening, strangely enough.
Yeah, definitely. So the most annoying thing in this show, excuse me one second, is Slutface, I don't know her name,
mm-hmm.
about to speak what is on her mind and running out of the room twice now.
Yes.
Twice in two different episodes. There has not been a single progression of this storyline.
And this might be period accurate that people actually did this, but it does drive my American sensibilities crazy. Because I'm like, just use your big girl words, man.
Yeah, definitely. So that's pretty much all I had to say about Downton Abbey.
Yep.
I'm going to let you take over for one of the other shows.
Okay, let's talk about Girls. What do you think about, because this is another one you recently caught up to. Did it live up to the hype?
Definitely. I thoroughly enjoyed season one.
It's brilliant. Let me ask you this. What do you think about the charge that people levy against this that say it's not self-aware enough, or that the show itself has a lack of awareness?
Oh, I thought it was very aware.
I think the characters have a lack of awareness, but the show is very aware.
Charlie, for instance, is a great example of a character not having any awareness.
Yes. Well, even Hannah's, like her speech to her parents about, look, I might be, you know, it's so self-centered and narcissist, but the show knows that that's what she's doing.
Yes, I totally agree with that.
I can see why there is a certain type of person would watch the show and find it insufferable, but I find it entertaining as hell.
I just think it's a natural floundering of people, young kids trying to find themselves.
Right.
Figure out who they are and what they want.
Yes.
And I completely identify with
it. Like, I know people that do these things. I've been the person that's done some of these things. I've been on the receiving. It's funny to see it from, because it's mostly female angle, right?
Sure.
And, like, to see situations I've seen on the other side of the looking glass.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like I've known guys like Charlie. I've known guys like Adam. I've been guys like Charlie. I have
never known a guy like Adam.
Really?
Ever. Never. I mean, that guy is crazy.
Yeah.
But I have to say, his bluntness is just hilarious.
He reminds me a lot of my old buddy Ace Jace.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much that, yeah. But the thing is, in the beginning of the season, I thought he was a complete borscht ass. Hannah should leave him. By the end of the first season, I'm thinking, this guy's actually a pretty stand-up dude.
Yeah, I thought they were really good together.
And I'm flabbergasted that Hannah has just, like, she got bored with him. As soon as she got him,
well,
she's like,
come on, man. She fell for the start of Community. What can you do? Danny Glover is a cool guy.
Yes, but the thing is like, she's wanting to do everything.
I'm sorry, not Danny Glover.
Donald Glover.
Oh, jeez.
Donnie Glover.
Yeah, they're not even related.
Are you sure?
Positive.
No, but I feel like it's like she's one of the most frustrating characters on the show because she is completely oblivious about, you know, she thinks it's like, well, I'm going to do everything opposite, you know, and I'm going to set up all these weird rules like you can't say the word love and all this other stuff. But then by the end of the episode, she's thrown that out the window and she's back to being this dude's booty call.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's good stuff there, especially their relationship is one of the main things that I like. Some of the other relationships I am not into. Shoshana.
I love Shoshana.
Drives me fucking crazy.
You don't like Shoshana?
No, I hate her.
Oh, God, I love her. I could never date her or be her friend.
Of course.
But I think she's awesome. What do you
mean,
of course?
You just like watching her.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Like, when she... The funniest thing by far last season was her coked up.
Okay, that was pretty funny. Where she's running around and she turns up pantsless,
yes,
and kicks the guy in the
stick. Shit that she says, and I think it was great putting her with who's the Jessa?
Jess. The French girl, or
British, guess, whatever
British, yeah,
the worldly one. I thought pairing them up was a perfect, like, kind of sweet and sour, sweet and salty. It's like, you know, they really balance each other out. I don't know how that'll work outside that. I think.
Or wait, are you talking about Marnie moving in with her?
No. I'm talking about last season. They paired her up with Jess.
Okay, yeah.
I also think that I'm kind of... that's the one sour note of season one, is that Jess marrying the Wall Street douchebag came out of nowhere.
So I think that's going to blow up.
Well, of course
it
will.
Very soon. Next episode is my money.
Really?
Yeah, like done.
Interesting. I just don't understand why she did that.
She's very impulsive.
Yeah,
man.
Impulsive, but she also seemed very afraid of, like, that kind of commitment.
Well, it was a discussion she had with the mother of the kids who she was babysitting, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, that mom basically told her, you have no idea what you're doing with your life. You're scared.
Oh.
And that's when she went, oh my God, I'm going to go marry this guy.
I kind of feel like that weakened her character, because I feel like Jess, as she was portrayed in season one, would have been like, yeah, fuck that dried up old biddy.
Uh-huh.
She's just bitter about the choices she made in her life.
Yeah,
but you actually think that actually connected and hit her.
I do. Yeah. It was just the way they played that scene. But I actually thought that Jessa was like the normal one of season one. I thought okay, she was a little crazy.
She was,
but she had her head screwed on the
most
best.
Grounded, knew who she was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've kind of flipped that a little bit with her marrying Chris O'Dowd. I don't know his real name or his name in the show.
I don't either.
Hell,
she doesn't know where he lives. Why do I have to know what his name is?
There you go.
So this episode, it's interesting because a lot of people on Facebook said that this show was very dark. I still find it hilarious. And the dark aspect was Marnie being humiliated like 3 or 4 different times.
Yeah.
But I don't have any sympathy for Marnie because she used Charlie.
Yep.
You know, basically all season long, and kind of got what she's coming for, and then comes back and goes to the Charlie well to hurt him again at the end of this episode.
So
it's like, I don't think that's dark. I mean, I thought her and versus her mother was comedy gold. Like
her versus her mother.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Sitting
having
there in an outdoor
lunch.
Cafe.
Yeah.
And I love the final scene where they're both taking big gulps out of the wine glass.
Yeah. This is how I talk to my friends, except worse.
Yes. Like, yes. And, you know, I mean, then she got the gay guy came on to her.
Yeah. What do you make of that? I mean, at the end, they both say, don't try to be something you're not.
Well, see, I think that's the thing is that him and Hannah are kind of enabling each other. Mm-hmm. Like, they're in total denial that their lives are bullshit and crap. You know, like, Hannah thinks, like, oh, I've gotten over this relationship, and now I'm fucking a black dude, and I got these sophisticated rules,
yeah.
and I've got this awesome, cool gay roommate, and I'm like, basically living Will and Grace, and he's, like, the same thing, like, oh, we're the best roommates, and we're cuddling together, but, you know, he's, like, some gay older gay man sugar daddy
yep.
that he thinks is a bore, and obviously he's not attracted to at all. No, it's
the other way around. He's not the sugar daddy. He's...
Yeah, he's the sugar daddy.
Okay, with double E.
Yeah, double E.
Yeah.
The sugar child, I guess you'd call that. The gold digger.
Sure.
But it's like, yeah, it's, you know, I mean, I forget what the question you're asking.
I just said, what do you make of that scene? Like, why did he come on to Barney like that?
So I feel like that
he had that disappointing experience.
Yeah. And also, he really, him and Hannah have this underlying kind of edge to the relationship. They're still angry about the relationship yeah. they had before. And I yeah. feel like that, because I was thinking, like, God damn, Hannah's going to come back anytime now.
Hmm.
I feel like that both of them was really desperately hoping that Hannah would come home and catch them in the middle of the act and hurt her.
Hmm.
Because that's the whole relationship. Like, you know, Marnie's like, are we cool? And he's like, oh, yeah, we're cool. But they're not cool.
No. So, I mean, you could tell by the scene in the bar where he told her, it just flattened her. It crushed her.
Right.
Hannah.
But I think, what's the gay guy's name? Is it George?
It starts with an E. Elijah.
Elijah. Yeah. I feel like that he felt very kind of vulnerable and unwanted. And, you know, maybe he's going to try to be bisexual. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how it goes from here. It'll certainly be awkward between them.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, that's all I really had to say
yeah.
about this. Although, I got to say, I do love the music in this show.
Oh, the music
is so good.
It is fantastic.
It's really cool. So, that's it.
Many a Monday have I fed a song from that show into Spotify and be entertained all day long.
Yeah. Why don't we go to... what I consider the main attraction, which is Justified.
Let's say Portlandia for...
Oh, yeah. Let's do Portlandia first.
Okay. So episode... I'm going to call it 303 because I'm using the Wikipedia okay. numbering system. It's actually the second episode proper if you don't count the Christmas episode.
By the way, IMDb description of this episode is fucked up.
All right. Well, I wrote down my own. So this is missionaries, and the mayor sends Fred and Carrie door-to-door... to Seattle to spread the gospel of Portland.
Yeah.
And they have recruiting Chloe Savigny, I guess is how you pronounce her name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I recognized her. I didn't know
yeah.
what she was from, though.
Yes. And she's been in a lot of things, a lot of arty films. I remember she gave a dude a blow... the director of...
A blowjay?
The Brown Bunny or The Long Road or something, a blowjob, like a graphic blowjob in a movie. It's like, that's why I know her. Okay. This was weird for me to watch because I, once upon a time, was a door-to-door missionary myself.
Yeah, creepy.
And it's like, the thing I love about the show is it's super insightful about a lot of different things.
Oh, yeah, and like, super...
How do they know what it's like to be that? And they get the inflection of the voice...
Uh-huh.
You know, like when you're trying to convert somebody or you're trying to deal with like conversation stoppers and whatnot. It was very surreal to watch that.
Sure. And they ended up getting exactly one person, which is about the ratio yeah, you get.
That's your success rate.
Yeah.
And there's clearly something wrong with her. She's like, you know, easily influenced.
I'm sorry.
That's not fair.
They got three people.
Yes. The two dogs.
Fair enough.
What'd you think about the pedicab driver?
I thought that was hilarious.
We've been in Seattle. Have you been heckled by one of those dudes?
I haven't, no.
I've been like, yes. I feel like that's true to life.
I don't know how you do a pedicab in Seattle because it is so hilly there.
Oh, God.
I would not think that you would want to ride up one of those hills with a 700-pound dude.
No.
Seven blocks, a dollar a block.
Moving on to the highlight I thought of the episode was the Peter and Nance going to the doily shop, which was previously the Knot store.
Oh, you thought this was a highlight?
With Jeff Goldblum?
Yeah.
Jeff Goldblum is a pimp, man.
How do you say it? Do you say Goldblum? You say Goldblum.
What is it?
I say Goldblum.
Goldblum?
Jeff Goldblum.
I thought it was Goldblum.
I don't know. I think it's a U in there.
Yes.
Which is why I say Goldblum.
It is, but I think I've heard it pronounced Bloom.
You might be right.
But I am famous for mispronouncing
Listeners,
things.
Settle
the
this debate.
The thing is Jeff G., and I've known this to be true for almost every woman, he vaporizes women's panties.
Yeah.
He's got some kind of animal magnetism that's,
it's an
that
aura.
Even as a guy can appreciate.
And it's awkward, too. You feel awkward every second in his presence, but yet you are mesmerized.
Pants are charmed off.
I don't know what it is.
What did you think the highlight was?
I thought the highlight... This is the episode, right, where they were talking about the TV? Like, everybody's trying to...
Oh, spoiler?
Yeah, everybody's trying to discuss their favorite television shows, but at least one person has not seen it.
Yes.
So they can't. They're like, spoiler alert, don't tell me, I don't want
to
hear it.
Even getting to like Darth Vader's really Luke's father. Yeah. What? You know?
Yeah.
Dumbledore dies.
I feel like that every single day of my life. When I'm talking television with you, or I'm talking television with any of my friends,
I like the way we do it on our show. Our show is very much a zero-day phenomenon. If you don't watch it in real time, I don't give a... Because, you know, you have to choose to download our podcast or go to our Facebook site. You can't in good conscience say you're spoiling us when a show has premiered, okay? I'm like that because also I'm kind of famous for – I don't buy the whole if you're spoiler, you can't enjoy it.
True.
I actually think this is a little bit of 21st century America pretentiousness.
But what about Omar? Oh, man, he ruins Omar.
I was spoiled. That's the thing. From listening to the sports guys.
Spoiler alert. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah,
that's
Bill
the
Simmons
audience
spoiled.
Right now.
Yeah, they spoiled all that shit for me, but I still appreciated it when it happened. Like, if a story is well crafted, with few exceptions, even The Sixth Sense, after you spoiled it, you can watch it again and enjoy, and see all the things that you're seeing.
So we know all about this, right? I mean, Walking Dead, Breaking Bad. We've had massive spoilers for multiple shows, some of our favorite shows, and we still. They're our favorite shows.
Exactly. I feel like people that are that way, I mean, I understand there's people like that, and I'm not disrespecting you. I just feel like it's a little bit making too much out of the issue.
Yeah, and I feel like that sketch kind of pushed me more into the camp of not giving a shit about spoilers.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just like, this is absurd. This is ridiculous. I can't get together and talk with my friends about a show because not everyone has seen every piece of television ever made.
Right, right.
It's insane.
Right.
Let's just forget it. So,
moving on to episode 304, Nina's birthday.
Yeah.
I actually love it anytime Fred Armistead dresses up like a woman.
Yeah.
And he does it in the bookstore owner, Women and Women's First. He does it this. And
this one where they flip roles. They flip genders.
Carrie Brownstein. Is it Brownstein?
Brownstein, I think.
She dresses up as a dude, like a stereotypically dude with a white wife beater. She got this crazy ass hipster mustache, and she talks and just like
rides a motorcycle.
Oh yeah. But she's having a birthday party, and this is another kind of American weird American deal that. My phone's ringing. Is downstairs, so it's gone. It's just another American pretentiousness. I've seen, like, you know, grown men and women taking a whole weekend to throw birthday parties.
Sure.
And I'm not judging you if you do that. I just, that seems like it's exhausting.
Well, that's kind of the thing. When they go to the bank to apply for the birthday loan, he automatically assumes it's for a child.
Right.
Because
does he?
Most, yeah, he whips out the form for the children. And he's like, oh, what grade? Does she get good grades? Like... And they're like, oh, no, this is for an adult. And he's like, oh, yeah, that's another form.
Yeah. But that's not uncommon. I mean, the stuff that she's talking about is like, you know, horseback rides and sunrise yoga and these crazy dinners and the celebrity appearances.
Yeah. Tapas. And it ends up bankrupting half the group there. They're taking out loans just to attend her birthday.
And another great couple, the Kath and Dave, which are kind of like the asshole couple that filmed the tent video from last season. They did the canoeing from the year before. They're always – and that's particular. They took this birthday party as an excuse to let everyone know that they just got back from a trip from Spain and like, and they're doing the elaborate pronunciations. Uh-huh. And,
oh, and this is not what we would actually eat.
This is not authentic. Send this back. This is not authentic. You know, Spaniards, they do the wine like this. I'm like, oh, my God. That's – Jesus Christ, that is so annoying.
Yeah, and the reason all of that stuff really works is because we all know people like that, right?
Yes.
And it just...
Hopefully, we're not ever those people.
Oh, I'm sure we are those people at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure I've done the spoiler thing like and said, don't tell me. I don't want
to
hear it.
I feel like I took a trip to Quebec and I came back a little bit like that. I was really affected Quebec.
Oui, oui.
The Quebecis. I guess
here we go, offending all our Canadian listeners.
Interestingly enough, Patton Oswalt was another highlight as the Evite response comedian.
Yeah, who gains fame by making awesome responses to Evites.
Right.
I did think Plus 97 was pretty funny.
It was pretty funny. Yeah. And I also like the fact that he gets met, you know, and people are recognized, and then he's like, you know, they're like, oh, do you go to any of these things? He's like, oh, no. Yeah. I feel like that's a real thing, like some of the cons we go to. Like, there are some professional convention goers. Mm-hmm. Like, I swear to God, that's all they do.
Yeah.
And...
every other weekend.
Yeah, and they're not really involved in the things that the cons are about anymore.
Hmm. Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't know. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I thought was funny in there.
We probably won't revisit Portlandia for a couple of weeks. We'll let them build up, you know.
Yeah, like we've always said, it's hard to cover a comedy.
It is. I think Archer's going to be the same way.
We just end up saying, oh, this was funny.
Speaking of Archer, did you hear Seppenwall and... Feinberg's podcast this week, they said the first 6 minutes of Archer, this episode comes out tonight on 10 o'clock, January 17th, is the funniest Archer's ever been.
Really?
Yeah. Like they were both in hysterics just remembering it. I'm with child to see the show.
Yes, I'm ready for it.
Are you ready for the main event?
I don't know if I can handle it.
Ding, ding, ding. Justified.
All right, it's Justified time. We haven't been really... I don't think I mentioned what episode of Downton Abbey we covered, but Justified 402 is what we're covering now, called Where's Waldo?
We did 303 of Downton Abbey.
Yes, we did.
Before we get started, I want to recommend everyone, whether you hate Chris Hardwick or love him, he's got a podcast called The Nerdist, and he did an awesome interview with Timothy Oliphant a couple weeks back, and I noticed it on my feed, listened to it. They don't talk about Justified hardly at all. They talk about Deadwood a decent amount. But Timothy is just super entertaining.
I feel like he is not stretching at all to play Raylan.
Oh, no.
He is that guy. He is just that smooth. He is just that funny.
He actually came on to the podcast and Raylan'd Hardwick.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, kind of down putting the show and making it seem like, you know, and making fun of his other friends' projects.
Well, Hardwick had a gun and he just talked it right out of his hands.
Mm-hmm. So, it's really fantastic if you're an Oliphant fan. Check it out.
It is.
Continue, sir.
So, the storylines in 402 of Justified. It starts off with Raylan and this blonde girl. I don't remember her name.
Lindsay.
And her husband, which we find out much, much later at the very end that it is her husband.
Uh-huh.
I don't like this girl.
I don't either.
I don't like her. And I remembered why from season
her
three.
Voice.
Her freaking voice. She sounds like a four-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Just, she's pouty. She's, I don't like anything
I don't like
about her.
Her face?
Her face is not bad.
Nah,
I don't care.
Oh, man. She looks like a low rent, like... three quarters of the catalog through Frederick's A Hollywood Girl.
Oh, God. I just don't like her. And she's, unless they pull something out of their hat here, she's not there for a real reason. I mean, they're going to have to really do something interesting with her husband this time.
I'm just saying that, like, because we always talked about how this show really nails female characters. Like, Ava's strong. She's still interesting. Winona actually held her own against Raylan, the season two mining company executive.
Yep.
You know, obviously Mags.
Mags, of course. Mags.
Even this fucked up family chick. I forget what the Truth family. The Truth family. Yeah. She was kind of awesome. Uh-huh. And did you know something else I got on the Seppenwall show is that she was one of the ones considered to play Mags Bennett.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and Margot Martindale, I think, or Martingale, beat her out. But I actually think she would have been a very interesting Mags as well.
Sure.
Anyway. This Lindsay chick doesn't hold a fucking candle in the wind to any of those people.
No, not at all. I mean, even Winona, who's no longer around.
Right.
She was fantastic. I don't like this girl at all.
I don't think she holds her own with the witty Raylan banner, too.
No. Well, no one does, to be fair.
No, but seriously, how hard is it to not come across as charming when you're trading sexy talk with Timothy Oliphant?
I wouldn't know.
I'm just saying, honestly. It just seems like you'd have to work. I mean, everybody that he's on screen with kinds of shines, and
yeah.
She doesn't. She shines like a wet turd.
Fair enough. So I don't know. I'm interested to see where they go with her husband. That angle has not really developed enough to really speak about it.
Okay.
Other than he's a fighter and he challenged Raylan right up at the beginning.
Right.
So you know that's going to come to a head, right? At
Probably.
Some point, they're going to fight. He's going to get the best of Raylan.
You
unless
think so?
Raylan has a gun.
Yeah, yeah, which is entirely likely.
It's likely, but I don't know that he'll... I don't feel like the opportunity will be presented immediately
okay.
for him to just take this guy out.
Okay.
I think he's going to have to get the beat down.
Fair enough. Once, but if he's the big bad for this season, fuck me.
No, he's not the big bad. Wynn okay. Duffy
oh,
might be the big bad.
The return of the Duffy.
With a haircut and everything, he's looking scary.
Dude, him without facial hair is like
yeah.
borderline demonic. Like, there's something alien and wrong about his face.
It's the eyebrows or the lack thereof.
Yeah.
It's weird. And
he also has these, like, weird skin horns at the corners of his mouth that looks like a mustache should be there, but it's not.
Well, that's how his eyebrows are, too. Yeah.
Yeah. They're, like, kind of like a horn, you know.
It's like he has faux hair
yeah.
on his face. It's not real.
You know, like the warts on the side of a toad's head? That's what he has for eyebrows. And it's really disturbing.
It's intimidating, for
it
sure.
It is intimidating. Hell yeah, it is.
But yeah, I can't wait to see what develops here with Wynn Duffy, because Boyd is scared shitless of this guy.
He has made a full rehabilitation from his time under the carpetbagger.
Oh, yeah.
He's because Quarles scared the shit out of him.
Yep.
And now he is large and in charge, and it's a good look.
Boyd is not crazy enough to scare the shit out of Duffy.
No, boy. In fact, I think Buffy.
Duffy. Duffy the Vampire Slayer. That's
Wynn
a t-shirt waiting to happen.
Wynn not only turned the tables, he flipped the tables over
mm-hmm.
on Boyd. That was awesome.
And it happened right after Boyd went in and flipped the tables on the Preacher.
Oh.
After an amazing scene there.
All right.
I mean, let's talk about Boyd and the Preacher for a second.
Oh, I kind of thought they were going to make us wait several episodes
Me
for
too.
This. But holy shit, what a good scene.
Great scene. Like you said earlier to me, it's preacher versus preacher here. I mean, Boyd, we know, has been through all of this before. He can talk the talk.
And the
he can
is,
walk the walk.
What you really appreciate, have you seen it? Have you done a rewatch yet?
No.
When you rewatch this, after you know that, you know, he's like, the weak link is the sister.
Yeah.
The way they film and shoot that, where as he's talking, he's kind of like glancing all
oh,
around
yeah.
the room and they cut back and forth. It's like, it really is like, you know, a sheepdog trying to separate the weak members of the flock.
Yeah.
And that's the whole reason he's going in there. He it's a fact-finding mission. He's stirring shit up and seeing what happens.
Yeah, and when, once he has found out
mm-hmm.
who it is that he's really after here,
mm-hmm.
then he goes into his preacher mode. Then
right.
he's showing his cards,
right.
you know.
Right.
I like that a lot. I can't help but think this preacher is not all he pretends to be.
Yes. Clearly.
Why else would he be there?
But what really flabbergasts me is this whole no money thing.
Yeah, it was a good move.
Yeah.
It was a good move. And maybe he is not the one we need to be concerned about. Maybe it is his woman.
Do you think he's aware of what she's doing?
He might not be.
That
no.
she's just using him because, like, you know, he's got the shtick and that she's...
She's just clinging on and...
Right.
Getting some money.
Well, but is it unfathomable that she's working with Wynn Duffy to move heroin into the source of the heroin is actually her?
Interesting. I had not thought of that.
That's a perfect cover.
That's a good hypothesis. I like it.
Right. Because do you think Wynn was lying about not knowing that his dealer was down in Harlan?
Surprisingly, no. I don't think he was lying.
I felt like both of them were caught with their pants down because Boyd had no fucking clue
yeah.
that Arlo went ham on that prison trustee.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Wynn had any idea that what's-his-face that ate a gun
yeah.
Was down there in Boyd's territory. So how did that guy get down there?
That is a good question, and she may be the connection.
So that's my little theory.
Interesting. I like it. So we also know Art is retiring soon.
I guess.
Because Patrick, this dude from another division.
Angling for his job.
From the city is coming in, yeah. Looking
Art,
for holes.
Art was on fire this episode.
He is.
That long soliloquy about how fucked up his Marshall branch is.
Yeah.
I like how White Marshall is.
PSTD guy.
Yeah, here. White Marshall's now been upgraded to Sniper Marshall. Black Marshall's still Black Marshall,
sure.
I think. I don't know anything. Although I didn't find out that she's left her husband, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't know that, did we?
No. Also,
and then Raylan is Raylan.
Raylan is certainly Raylan. And that was really funny, him talking about all the dysfunction.
Yeah.
It's almost like a sitcom.
And he had probably the best line with the Marshall Stiffy.
The Marshall Stiffy.
I thought it was hilarious.
And Boss Don't Drive.
Boss Don't Drive.
Words to live. Yeah, when he said, like, who's driving? He's like, the boss don't
Made
drive.
Made Raylan drive.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway, what do you think about Boyd's relationship with Johnny? I feel like he's really pushing him too hard.
In season three, I thought it was up in the air, too.
Well, yeah.
And then he showed that he's totally loyal to Boyd. So you think now it's coming around and Johnny's just getting tired of Boyd's shit?
I think there's a little bit. I think Johnny's always been looking for an opportunity. Like,
but
if
he
the
had
right
an opportunity
came
last
along,
season, didn't
when?
He?
With Devil? You're talking about the one with Devil? I think Devil.
I wouldn't
just a
follow
dumb,
Devil.
That's
anywhere,
what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Which opportunity are you talking about then?
But Devil was going with Quarles, right?
Yeah.
So maybe he would have followed Quarles.
Yeah, but again, Devil being the, you know, I feel like
Fair
Quarles, that's the downfall of Quarles when he went after, although we kind of talked about the show, that was kind of a win-win proposition. He either gets him away from Boyd, which weakens his empire.
Or he kills him.
Or he kills him, which weakens his empire. So maybe not, but I don't know. I just feel like that Devil was a guy with a very limited skill set.
All right, so
and
what
Johnny
do you think is going on with Boyd now? Or, I'm sorry, with Johnny now?
I just feel like if Johnny had the right opportunity and the right muscle, he would certainly fuck Boyd. And he also, the other thing we learned about him last season, he's insanely jealous of Ava.
Yeah.
So Boyd being riding Johnny hard, especially when Johnny's got good points that even Ava says, like, look, you know, I think kind of, you know, maybe we should go down there.
And with Boyd losing his hold on Harlan, I mean, this...
He's never really had a consolidated since his dad and Mags died.
It's
There's
true.
Been his power vacuum that he has somehow been unable to fill.
He's been desperately trying, and he's gotten a certain
one
amount
thing
of success.
Or another. Right.
But now it's crumbling once again.
Right. He can't even keep his whores in line.
Yeah. And that's another thing. I mean, do you think Ellie Mae's gone for good now? I think so. I think she's on the preacher's side.
I don't know. It was interesting seeing... That was one of the interesting things about the Boyd and Preacher, Johnny, I guess. Wait, no, his name's not Johnny. What is his name?
No, I think it's Billy.
Billy.
Yeah.
I feel like that she was watching like a tennis match. You know, like, you know, who's right, who's right, who's right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Because this guy... Boyd's going to stay in Harlan County unless this is his last season and die. And what is Ellie Mae going to do? You know?
I don't know. I mean... Ava gave her a pretty strict ultimatum there. I mean, it was, you don't come back tonight to work, you're done. You're never setting foot in this bar again.
Maybe.
So, I think she's done there.
Right.
I also and the final thing. Yeah.
That Billy got a little Pulp Fiction-y. Some of the stuff he was quoting, like,
oh boy.
They will oppress my brother, and you will know. My name is the Lord. He got a little Pulp Fiction in his in his diction, a little Jewels.
Did he?
Yeah, I thought so. It's towards the end.
Who did? Boyd?
No, Boyd was straight Southern Baptist preacher.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Billy got a little Jewels from Pulp Fiction quoting the bullshit Ezekiel verse or whatever. It doesn't actually exist in the Bible.
He doesn't seem like he has enough of an edge to pull off Jewels.
I don't know.
Boyd turns it on. I like that.
Also want to shout out, because I bagged on Rose Colton, I guess.
Who's that?
Colton, the...
Shelby?
No. The Iraqi war vet that's the Boyd's
muscle.
Yeah. I thought his scene interrogating that dealer and finding that was actually pretty cool.
Punching him, knocking him back down every time he tries to stand up.
Yeah, he still looks like a fat sack of shit. Like, he's got the body of a 10-pound bag, a burlap sack full of potatoes. Oh, and he looks like he's wearing a bad wig.
You have so many people who are going to come down on you at once who you've insulted this episode.
And I can't
I mean, Edith is coming to get you from Downton.
Whoa, I love Edith. I said she's hot.
No, 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 no. You said she looked like a sack of assholes.
No, no, I did not.
Sure you did. I heard it.
I thought Mary's dress looked like a
sack
of assholes.
No, okay. Well, I'm going to agree with you here because I think this guy is not a really good actor either.
No.
I just felt like he was the guy on set who was not pulling his weight.
Right.
So,
or he might have been
come
like,
after
like,
me if you want.
Like, yeah, some key grip. They're like, you're rocking that flannel pretty hard. Stand in for one of these Harlan Hillbillies. Hey, yeah. You know, it's working.
Yeah. We couldn't get the guy we wanted, so step in here.
I did like to see the return of Sheriff Shelby.
Yeah. Yeah, and his relationship with Boyd. Obviously, he thought it was over. They were done.
I think he fucked up letting Boyd back in his life.
Absolutely.
Because I think if he had rolled tough on Boyd, Boyd would have left him alone. But now Boyd's going to be in his back pocket the whole
time.
That's
the thing. He says, okay, I give you this file. We're done. And he's like, whatever you say,
that's
Shelby.
That's what you said last season, you dumbass.
Yep.
Wow.
So Boyd's going to come back to him again and again. Waldo Truth and Arlo, there's still a connection here. We learn a little bit more about Waldo Truth. We learn
with the Drew Thompson's connection.
That he's actually the guy who flew that plane. He did not drop out of the plane and kill himself. That was the Drew Thompson guy.
Is it? I'm very unclear about the fine points of this plot.
Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. You're right.
I think you got it reversed.
I did reverse it. So Waldo
this
Truth
has got
was
an art
stabbed,
connection too, which
was
is
stabbed
cool.
in his buttock.
Mm-hmm.
And so was the corpse they found thrown out of that plane.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, Drew Thompson is somewhere living high on the hog, probably on heroin money.
Well, and I wonder if Drew Thompson wasn't money. The guy we met in the very beginning of the episode. You know, the old guy who's like, well, I guess middle-aged guy who, like, saw the guy hit the ground.
Saw the guy
He's
hit
lived
the
in the house. It happened right outside his house.
You think that's him? See, I thought he was in the plane.
Oh, really? See, again, I'll probably get shit for this, but I really don't I don't get so far what is going on. And
yeah, well,
and
I think they
clearly
have
a connection, you know, so.
Arlo has a connection.
Right.
We don't know enough yet.
Right.
So, interested to see where that goes, though.
I think that was one of the questions we had last week about whether it is definitively against martial policy to do jobs on the side, and yeah. Art definitely let us know that.
For sure.
So
when they go to the Truth House, right?
Oh,
there's
God.
All this crazy shit going on.
These people are violently ignorant.
That is a good way to describe them.
Yeah.
Willfully violently ignorant.
Ignorant, yes.
I cannot stand these people.
No.
I'm sorry.
They made my skin crawl.
Yeah, I was waiting for the marshals to just unload on them because these people do not need to exist.
You know... Ted Cox, our old friend, the embedded Harlan reporter, he wrote in, he said, just one note on the realism for Justified. He said, since I spoke to you last season, I've had seen 5 people from my high school class who stayed in Harlan that have been incarcerated. 2 for receiving stolen property and drug possession, 1 for burglary, 1 for armed robbery, 1 for attempted murder, in parentheses, firing on an officer in possession.
Oh,
he
geez.
Says, all sweet, down-to-earth people.
By Harlan standards.
Yeah. So it's like, I feel like maybe they're the Truth family. They're in the Truth family.
Yeah, possibly. Where was I going with this Truth thing?
I don't know.
I don't know either. They're crazy, though. I know where I was going. So what is the jurisdiction of the marshals? They are looking for fugitives, right?
Yep.
So when the guy lights the joint and they've got all these guns, they're not really going to haul them in for
they
that,
could.
Are they?
I mean, they're like,
could they?
Like they are law officers as well.
Yeah, I'm just wondering like where their jurisdiction to prosecute people actually ends.
I think
any crime that happens in the course of them investigating a fugitive?
Any law officer that was witness to a crime, even in or outside his jurisdiction,
yeah, fair
has got authority.
Citizens are supposed to as well.
Yeah. But I'm saying like I just feel like Raylan has said on many occasions about marijuana and drugs and other stuff. Like I don't give a shit about that. I'm looking for a fugitive. I'm looking for this or that. So yeah, I mean their bulwark is or ballywick or whatever you call it is largely returning fugitives to justice.
Yeah.
So, or at least the cool parts of the marshals are, anyway. Have you gone to the U.S. Marshal site?
No.
It makes marshaling look to be complete total badassery, man. Like, they look like they're wearing, like, ninja Navy SEAL guard, and they're kicking down doors, and it's like,
nice.
You know. But I've heard that most of the marshals are, like, babysit courts and, like, just run prisoners from interest prison transfers, and it's super boring.
Oh. Well, that certainly wouldn't make a good TV show.
No, it would not.
Can you imagine Raylan sitting on a bus just guarding a bunch of prisoners? Okay, well, that's pretty much all I've got to say about Justified.
I got two more listener feedbacks on that, short ones. Alex F. agreed with me, said that he didn't like Constable Bob either. He's a believable enough character, and he works pretty well for foil for Raylan, but here's the thing. He's annoying as shit. And that's intentional, of course. Raylan's clearly annoyed by him, but there's a difference between a character who's annoying as a person and a character who's annoying to watch. In contrast, Jesse Pinkman in early season of Breaking Bad, he was annoying and acted like a dumbass, but he irritated other characters, not the viewers. He was fun to watch, whereas Constable Bob is kind of grating. Agreed, and I think that's a problem, and it's no small accident that I like this show this much better when every other scene wasn't Constable Bob bringing down the action.
Yeah.
Tim G, though, took issue with me, said, I completely disagree with Aaron's opinion of opening season 4 of Justified. 5 of 10? It was the best hour of TV I've seen since Breaking Bad went off air. I like zombie porn as much as any aficionado, but there's not a single episode of The Walking Dead that should rate higher than the lowest rated Justified episode.
Oh,
let me ask you this.
That's bold.
So when I say 5 out of 10,
yeah,
unless otherwise stated, I'm judging on a Justified scale.
Yeah, yeah.
The same thing when I say Walking Dead. When I say Walking Dead's 10 out of 10, that might be an 8 out of 10 compared to the very best of Mad Men. Or, and I, honestly, if I say 10 and 10 for Mad Men and Breaking Bad, that's like a 9 out of 10 for if I was talking about The Wire.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
So I'm kind of like, that's how I – but I stand by that. I think that this was a mediocre – and the other thing is I use the whole scale. 5 out of 10 is just mediocre.
Yeah.
Like
it's
a lot
not
of,
bad.
Like if you read a game magazine, they gave it like a 5 out of 10. It's the shittiest thing you've ever seen. It like doesn't even run. It burns your computer down. 5 out of 10 is just okay.
Yeah.
So I mean, if I said 1, but and also like I just
so the season theoretically there would have to be a 1 out of 10, right?
Yes.
I mean, if you're judging on a per show scale,
yes.
And there must be a worse episode of the show.
I've never, like, the shows that we cover, I don't know any of them have turned into number one.
But there has to be. If you're judging on a per-show scale, that show must have a worst episode. One of them must be rated 1 out of 10.
No, I don't think that's because you have to leave limits for how low something can go. And I'm saying that these shows are mostly excellent, okay. So they're just not going to do that.
Right.
You know.
I think you've got a flawed bit of logic there.
I don't know. How would you give it, like, if you gave the worst episode a 1, then what happens when a show's even, episode's even worse than that?
Yeah, well, that's the problem, right? Especially if you give something, it works on the opposite extreme, too, a 10 out of 10.
Right.
What if there's another better
if
one?
If it came as a better, then I would say, like, I would move it, I guess I kind of get this mental hierarchy of shows where The Wire's on top. Then Breaking Bad and Mad Men are jockeying for number 2, and then you got Game of Thrones and Justified, and The Walking Dead is below those. It's like if Walking Dead got a 12, I would actually leapfrog it, and maybe it would go above Justified or something like that.
Huh.
So you have to be inside my brain for any of my ratings to make sense.
So really, none of this matters. Congratulations,
you got me, Tim. Are you happy?
You've ruined our shows. We're done podcasting.
Anyway, yeah. I think the reason I mentioned that is I think you can kind of work on the same thing. When we're given our rating scales, we're just talking about, we're not talking about compared to baseline TV, we're talking about within a show.
Yeah, definitely. The last question I have for you on Justified.
Sure.
How long before Dickie Bennett shows up?
I've heard that Dickie and Dewey might not be in this season.
No.
Yeah.
Man.
That's just a rumor that I've heard on the Seppenwalls site.
Maybe they're just saving up for season 5.
Maybe.
That'd be nice.
But it's weird to not have them in.
A little bit, yeah. All right, that's all I've got. And I think that's all the shows we covered.
Ready for outro?
Definitely. My voice is gone, man. Take it away.
We are part of the Bald Move Network. You can find all of our content at baldmove.com, including our full coverage of The Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, and latest season of Mad Men and Breaking Bad. Also, don't forget our affiliates, Personal Arrogance Crew out of Seattle, This week, the boys talk about Colonial Space Marines or messing with canon. Then expanding the Star Wars canon, some more NASA news, and casino time. Meanwhile, our sister cast over at the Because Show, based in L.A., Jerilyn takes the online Jeopardy test. Amy talks Money Matters, and I'm excited because I haven't listened to the show, but I read the show notes and some of the sites that they talk, like Mint.com. Yeah. Do you use that?
I have, yeah.
Mint is fucking fantastic for managing your money.
It is. I'm actually
it's scary.
Using something now called You Need a Budget.
Mm.
You can get it through Steam, and it's less past, like looking into the past than right. Mint is. It actually looks into the future and just says, okay, start now to right. budget.
And also, it looks like she might be falling to the gospel of Dave Ramsey, which I honestly, if you're trying to get out of debt, you can do a lot worse than listening to Dave Ramsey's free radio show for inspiration. It's kind of like the biggest, it's like a Biggest Loser version for your pocketbook.
Is he the guy with the crazy buttons and the noisemakers who does stocks?
No. No, he's a fucking idiot.
Oh, that's Jim Cramer. Never mind.
He's a dumbass.
Yeah.
They also discuss books such as I Capture the Castle and Cosmopolis.
Yeah.
Onomatopoeipolis. You can send us feedback at tv@baldmove.com. Spoiler alert, all of our email addresses go to the same
Don't
place.
Ever so say spoiler alert again.
You can send it to Watching Dead or Breaking Bad or Breaking Good or The Brains, whatever the hell. But TV, that's the insider shortcut.
Yep.
TV@baldmove.com. You can like me on Facebook.com/baldmove. Follow Jim on Twitter.com/baldmove. Biggest way you can support us and help us out with this new show is rate us on iTunes. We just got our fucking link approved. Yep. So go in there, give us an appropriate amount of stars, say some nice words about us. We really appreciate that. Really jazzes us. You can also contribute to our bottom line by using our Amazon affiliate link at amazon.baldmove.com. It costs you nothing. If you're buying stuff on Amazon anyway, use the link. We get a tiny cut of Amazon profits. It's win-win. And finally, tell a friend. If you got some, I actually did this today. I overheard a guy at my office talking about Justified. I sidled up to him.
You sent him to David Chin's podcast.
I did. I said, you want to listen to quality Justified the talk? You go to David Chin's podcast. Then, if you want to hear us talk about some other, morons talking about just random TV bullshit, you try our podcast out.
Sure.
But anyway.
Okay, that's
it. That's
all
I got.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening. I'll try to come back next week with a voice. Until then, I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron. See you next week.